Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
Why take one vacation with the family when you could take all of them? With Royal Caribbean, you don't just go to the beach. You visit a private island and race down the tallest water slide in North America. You don't just go for a road trip. You ATV and zip line through the jungle. You don't just go somewhere new. You rappel down waterfalls and discover ancient temples. Because this isn't just any vacation. This is all the vacations. Come seek the Royal Caribbean. Ships Registry, Bahamas.
This is the Royal Blue Podcast from the Liverpool Echo, giving you the inside track on all the big talking points from Goodison Park.
Hello everyone and welcome to another edition of Goodison Park, my home, as we recall the magical memories of Everton's long-time home ahead of the stadium move. And I'm delighted to have Michael Ball here with us today, regular Echo columnist. And but after speaking to some players from back in the 80s, I'm just glad to have somebody of the same age as myself as Michael on this week. I'm the older party, I think, by about a month or something like that. But I was grappling with Freshers Week at university in September 97. Michael was grappling with Patrick Vieira and Dennis Bergkamp in the Premier League as he was facing Arsenal. But good to see you, Michael. Great to you come in and speak to us today.
Yeah, no problem, Chris. Looking forward to it.
Yeah, I mean, lifelong Evertonian, of course. But what were your first, like, your earliest football memories or the first thing you can remember about Everton or going to Goodison Park?
Well, I'd like someone to look into this, to be honest. I was talking to my parents not so long ago. I was born in Lowell Street, which is 4 or 5 streets away from Goodison.
Yeah.
And obviously, in my nappies, then can't really remember much of that time. But then my dad was in the pub game, and he owned and ran the Tramways pub, which is not there anymore, but it's only a few streets away off County Road. And he used to always look at the window. My dad would always sneak off to the match with his uncles. My dad's one of 9, right, the eldest, so they'd all march on, leave me mum with the children. And I'd be looking out of the window, seeing all the fans going towards Goodison. And I was hooked from then. Wanted to see where they're going and what they're doing. And probably when I was around about 4 or 5, my mum forced him to take me to the games, probably give her a bit of respite. And for some reason, in the back of my mind, and maybe because of the programme I still got, was I think it might be Luton, but I'm not 100% sure.
Right, not too sure your first game.
So I used to go the odd game round about 4 or 5, but I think maybe when the weather was a bit better. And I just loved like just walking up from the pub and with all the fans and getting the odd 20p and 50p off my uncles to go to Chippy and stuff like that. And it was just a part of being my dad's side of the family, all massive Blues. And when I got a little bit old enough, we ended up going to the main stand or the family enclosure a little bit. A few of them were members of the 500 Club, which I think might be the Alex Young now, I'm not too sure. So I used to go in there and cause havoc, really, with the other children that were there because of half-time or, you know, we were spoiled, weren't we? You know, the team are fantastic and they had the dance floor turned into a football pitch between me and the little lads there and playing football with a paper cup and running out to get the pink echo afterwards. I had my jobs to do. that was just hooked from first time I witnessed all the fans marching up to Goodison Park and to be a part of that as a fan was brilliant.
Yeah, I'm actually looked like really big as well when you're that age. I remember Mike going to the game first time, how big the main stand actually seemed. It must have been quite the sight.
Yeah, it was just impressive. Yeah. You know, just loved it. And obviously the team were brilliant. And the lads in the 80s, we had a successful time. And you were just spoiled. Just when you win the league, you're singing outside the Wimslow. My dad would go to Wimslow. My mum would pick us up afterwards and we're singing songs. And The players would be sticking their heads out of the windows and just getting a bit of a cheer. And there's good, great memories of my childhood going to the game.
Yeah, so it was interesting when you got playing with Taunton before we went on air, before actually you described it as a few years over on the dark side, when you were actually training with Liverpool as a youngster before you came to Everton.
Yeah, when we moved to, my dad come out to the pub game, we moved to Formby and I got to that age where I was trying to find new friends from school and you start playing football in the park and I think my dad sort of few a few little hints here and there to get me in a team where I shouldn't have been in the team instead of a seven when I wasn't, and we joined the local team. And fortunate for me, there was a good players in that setup. Yeah. John Newby was that. There was Barry McCauley, whose father was Hugh McCauley, top coach at Liverpool under Stephen Highway and Dave Shannon. And because of my performance just in and around the place, he invited me in to go to Melwood once a week, and moved into Littleland High School later on as their centre of excellence. And that was part of sort of learning the trade, really, of learning how to play football with good quality players in and around yourself. Only about an hour a week, but it was different than it is nowadays, where you know, the only kit I had and turn up at Melwood was an Everton kit. So you know, there's a lot of stick, a lot of banter going on, but they loved it. I loved it. I made sure it was ready for every time I went on the Tuesday, and Highway, Shannon and Hugh would give me a bit of stick for it. But they were fantastic coaches, and all about technique and how to pass. And you know, I can still spot players who've been coached under them, how they pass a ball, how they receive a ball. Right. It does stand out to me, and they were fantastic. But I was still waiting for the call, and when that came, it was it was much wanted.
Yeah, and when you came to Everton, you were saying you weren't actually at Everton all the time, because I don't know, some of the younger viewers might not be aware of this, but the old National School of Excellence down at Lillishaw, you were down there. How did that actually work then, in terms of what you were doing?
Yeah, so your club, well, it was the club at the time was Liverpool, put you forward to just to go for trials. I think just, you know, whenever there's thousands of kids around the country, it gets whittled down from north to south. You go to Keele University, and then it gets down to the final 16, and you get a chance to do a bit of a scholarship in a school, in the National School Centre for 2 years, so from age 14 to 16. So how I signed for Everton was quite a funny story, really, because obviously Ray Hall was head of the academy. Yeah. Finally, the call came, and he said, Howard Kendall wants to meet you in a fancy restaurant where Howard lived. And you had to wear a suit. I didn't have a suit to my name. I had to borrow somebody's suit, a couple of sizes too big for me, just to get into the place. And it was just an honour just to meet Howard.
Yeah.
You know, just to meet Howard and Ray Hall. And I had opportunities. I went to try out Man United, older, and that's when it sort of gets a little bit serious, right? Yeah. At the 13, 14 age for schoolboys forms. And Howard, you know, just does what Howard does, and asked me the question, do you want to play for us, son or lad? And I said yes, and then marched me off to the other side of the restaurant while my parents and Rayol and Howard have a discussion about all topics. I think my dad didn't hold back on a few signings and a few things here and there, and they had a nice little giggle. I was on my own for a couple of hours while they enjoyed themselves, and every so often my dad would go to the toilet and give me a wink. So I didn't know what they were talking about, but I knew it was positive. And waited for my parents were asleep and had a little nose of what happened. And I've signed for Everton Football Club, which was my dream come true. And not long after that, then when you're 14 in the September, I went off to Lillishaw for 2 years. So I didn't really get an opportunity to sort of play or train many times with the youth lads. It was only half terms, Easter holidays, so like that, you come back home, and if there was a game, an opportunity to play for the A team or the B team back then, you'd be a part of it to get to know your new teammates and that's going to be in the future. And I think one of my first games for Everton was at Melwood against all my old teammates, which was, you know, Michael Owen, Gerrard and Kumas. It was a very strong side, and you know, we won well, so I had a big smile on my face knowing I made the right decision.
Definitely. Your first team debut, that was actually Dave Watson, wasn't it, when he was caretaker manager just after Joe Royle had gone, and right saying you came on, was it Tottenham Hotspur, was it?
It was, yeah, it was. I don't know whether it's the impatience of myself, Joe and Willie Donaghy, but Jimmy Gabriel was brilliant to me. When I come back from school after Lillishaw, 16, YTS. I was only YTS for 3 months. So it was only 3 months of cleaning the boot room and cleaning the muds and stuff like that. And then at 17, in October, I turned professional. But Jimmy Gabriel, seeing aside that he wanted me to be involved in the reserves a lot more.
Yeah.
So through that pre-season, I was involved. The reserves wasn't like as it is today. It was only probably six or seven players. And it was filled in with the lads who never played for the first team, and then the rest of the youngsters, and probably playing left side, had probably helped me to get that opportunity. And it was just the shock of, I was quite strong for my own age and being playing a year above and 2 years above myself, I could hold my own. But then when you're in the man's world, it was a different kettle of fish. You had to use your brain a lot more. And Jimmy seeing something in me, and he used to pull me to one side and spend a lot of time with me and work on my game, work what I needed to do, short games. And I'm playing with like Limpard and Kinchowski's been there for a little bit, and Finney Zanways and Tony Grant, and these are footballers, you know, and you're very difficult. I used to hold my own against a lot of players who I can win a tackle, I can be aggressive, but they were very quick, very sharp, one or two touch in trade. And so it was a steep learning curve straight away from the off, but that was down to Jimmy pushing me, giving me that opportunity. And then Joe and Willie, when there was opportunities where, say, Andy Hinchcliffe or other first team players were injured or having a rest day, I'll join with the first team. And again, the level jumped up again of the sharpness. So it was great to be a part of it. I travelled a few times with Joe Royal, and you know, sad to see him go.
Yeah.
And that's when you think, oh, it's my opportunity to be in and around the first team gone now. But luckily enough, Dave Watson took over. He was under a lot of pressure. You know, we were in a difficult situation. I was on the bench and I didn't think I was going to come on that day. You know, I didn't think I was going to be a part of it. But moments happen in football, and Terry Fielding at the time, he went down with a bit of a nasty injury by the Gladys Street, and David pointed at me and told me to get ready. So all the sort of nerves of being a fan was always there. But then as soon as you got the call, it was sort of game on and ready to go. And just the buzz, I think I ran on the pitch from the main stand. Neville Southall had a goal kick when they made a substitution. I ran on, realised I ran too far, I've had to come back again. realised where I was playing, and Nev kicked the ball towards my side, it went over our head, and then that was it, the half-time whistle went.
Right.
So I had a bit more time to reflect and sort my head out. Dave Watson pulled me to one side, and he just said, do what you do. Do what you do. You know what the Evertonians like, you know what makes them tick, and you know, be aggressive, you know, make sure you win your battles. And that was in my head, and I've never been booked, I've never been sent off, and I've been pretty sharp and attackable, pretty fair. And not long after, in the second half, I thought I was stronger than Ramad Vega, and I went through the back of him by the park end. I got a yellow card, and I was thinking, I can't be getting sent off on my debut. So that sort of calmed me down a little bit, but you get the cheer from the fans that I was showing a bit of aggression, and then it was an important win. We won 1-0, so to make my debut against a decent side, against like players who you've been looking at, and dangerous players of Stephen Carr was down that side, and Rule Fox, and you know, they were, you know, they were the danger men for them down that side, and to stop them and to have a, you know, a part in that game was brilliant. To come off on me debut with a 1-0 win.
The Royal Blue Podcast from the Liverpool Echo.
Why take one vacation with the family when you could take all of them? With Royal Caribbean, you don't just go to the beach. You visit a private island and race down the tallest water slide in North America. You don't just go for a road trip. You ATV and zip line through the jungle. You don't just go somewhere new. You rappel down waterfalls and discover ancient temples. Because this isn't just any vacation. This is all the vacations. Come seek the Royal Caribbean. Ships Registry, Bahamas.
With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial. And with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown. And through adaptable problem solving, we do just that. Learn more at marines.com.
The Royal Blue Podcast from the Liverpool Echo.
I mean, do you remember, were the family watching?
They were all there, we've all been season ticket holders. You know, myself, we've gone from, as I said before, main stand to family enclosure to all my mates in the Gladys Street. And, you know, what I said before, when I was YTS, Neville Southall used to try and get us to Goodison Park when it was your day off after an 18 game to go on the pitch and warm up, and have like warming up half 11
you know, hours before, wasn't he?
and we'd do keep you ups with our shins, which was a new one. And Nev was brilliant at it, but just to share the pitch with Nev was brilliant. And then I'll just jump over the walls of the sponsor boards and go and get to my seat in the Gladys Street after I've cleaned, and then probably give the players stick then as a fan. Yeah. And then walk in Monday as the teammates. But yeah, there was just to be around your heroes.
Yeah.
And I just had to suck it up as a sponge as much as possible, what they're doing right, what they're doing to add to their game and how they look after themselves, what they do in training. And I was just in awe, really, just sitting back and taking it all in.
Yeah, it's interesting what you say about Neff, because obviously we spoke to Kevin Ratcliffe and Derek Mountfield so far. So they're very much his contemporaries, aren't they? But someone like yourself, you've gone from being like your boyhood idol and then you're playing alongside him. Just what was it you've mentioned there? The dedication to the craft. That's what he was all about, wasn't he? Just the relentless training.
You heard all about it.
Yeah.
His own sandpit, and he was first one in, last one out. But until you'd actually witness it yourself, no matter what time you got to Belfield, Nev's sitting there with a cup of tea and some toast.
Yeah.
You know, 6:30 in the morning, he's there. You know, if we were travelling away with the reserves, and we had to get to Belfield early, Nev's already there.
Yeah.
You know, he'd done a lot of work before anyone even come into work to train. Nev was there all about. And he was, look, he was just a main man. Everyone had a nickname, whatever Nev called you, stuck for a while. I had a few. A few I didn't like, and a few that stuck when other players come. But it was just brilliant that he just showed that he cared. And, you know, you had something that he pushed his club forward and be a part of it.
Yeah, and within, I think it was about 3 days of making your debut, then you're playing in a Merseyside derby, aren't you?
Yeah, but Merseyside derbies are always nervous for fans. You know, even getting up in the morning, and you just think about the week before, to be honest. You know, he's thinking about it. But again, didn't think I was going to be a part of it. And I'm not a nervous person, but I was nervous that day sitting on the bench.
Right.
Liverpool were doing well. I think they were pushing for the title at some point, and they were up thereabouts. And again, another instance happened on the pitch with Craig Short. Fell down with a bad fall, and Dave pointed at me again, and that was it. It was sort of, wow, making, you know, I think it was the youngest player at the time to make Merseyside derby. So that was a great box ticked off, and we got a positive result with a 1-1. And you know, you're sort of getting, well, I just ran on the pitch. I remember seeing Duncan just pointed at a certain Liverpool player and said, stop him. So the game, really, I didn't really get involved enough. You know, I didn't really sort of get on the ball. It wasn't, it was a hit and rush. Liverpool were dominating, really, with Steve McManaman, and there was Rob Jones was their sort of threat. So I was stopping him and to take Rob Jones off, and I think they brought McAteer on, and then my job changed again, so to stop him. So I just cancelled out and done my bit. You know, didn't do any extra. Left a few nasty tackles on Jason, which he told me afterwards, which is good.
Yeah.
I didn't know. It was just come natural to him at the time. But I think that stopped Liverpool going for the title. I think Unzi and Robbie might have got sent off that game as well. So there was
a
typical Merseyside derby that you'd expect back then. But to, again, you know, positive result in my first two games as a young professional was brilliant.
Yeah, I mean, it was a great summer of uncertainty, wasn't it? Because I remember Peter Johnson, the chairman at the time, was promising all these big name managers. I think they were chasing Bobby Robson for most of the summer. Eventually, he didn't come, and then getting turned down by Andy Gray. And then your man, obviously, Howard Kendall, coming back in. And I mean, I was just looking back at it. You didn't play the first few games, but then obviously coming in for the Arsenal game, a huge fixture and a big impact from you.
Yeah, it was. It was back to square one under Howard. Pre-season was different than it was under Joe. I think he brought Terry Fearon to the football club. But, you know, Andy and Scruff was still there as well. But Andy was brilliant with me. We used to do extra a lot, me and Andy, and just work on our technique, our crossing. You know, he was fantastic at pinging 60, 70-yard balls across the pitch. And then, obviously, his famous corner kick. So used to try and emulate them, you know, in training with him. And under Howard, I just had to bide my time and wait for my opportunity. And then it was mostly when we played Newcastle away. I come on as a sub. I'm not sure if someone had got sent off, but I come on.
Yeah.
And Howard was really impressed how I managed situations. So that was me sort of in his front mind of his thoughts then moving forward. And, you know, the Belfield famous steps at the front, he was taking the boots off and he had another little wink, Howard. And then he goes, I remember that night, you know, when he met me mum and dad, and when I first saw him, I was 13, 14. Yeah. So that gave me a bit of a confidence booster that he remembered. But it was up to me to do the hard work. He never used to pull me to one side to say I need to work or anything. It was just being around them professionals in my first sort of, say, full season to try and stamp my own little thing on my performance of how I can bring to the football team. Because you look at the players in around you and go, yeah, the senior professionals, but can I do better? Yeah. And I've got to do better to get in. So I have to bide my time, but thankfully I got my opportunity.
Yeah, I mean, you mentioned that Arsenal game. They ended up being league champions that year, and you're 2-0 down at Goodison, and then Mike Ball pops up in the area with a header.
Yeah, it was a mix of emotions. Howard wanted me to play centre back, which I used to do a lot for the youth team and stuff, and it was the first time I'd done it and a senior, and I thought I was holding my own. You know, I was playing pretty well. I was and we were 2-0 down.
Yeah.
That was just the quality of Arsenal. And at half time Howard moved me then to left wing back, which wasn't my favourite position, but it was the system as choice at the time. A lot of teams were playing wing backs, and I got moved to left. So in the back of my mind, I was thinking, does he blame me for the goals or the opportunities? Yeah. But I think it was just his way of trying to get back into the game. And I knew what needs to be done as a fullback or as a wing back is the ball's getting the opposite side, trying to make sure you're in that back post area if anything comes across. And I think it was Teddy Fearing crossed it, and Graeme Stewart headed it back across, and I was there in between Tony Adams and Dave Seaman to put it away, and I ran off like I've scored the World Cup winner, I think, you know. And then there was you know, everyone coming over and applauding me, but then you realise it's only 2-1. You know, you've got to get back into the game, and you're just hoping could we get something out of that game to make it memorable for scoring your first goal. And thankfully, Danny, my youth teammate, come on and also got the equaliser. So that was a brilliant day for both of us.
Yeah.
And me and Danny still talk about that now, because it still comes up quite a lot of the two youngest 17-year-olds to score in a Premier League game at the time. And I think that still stands. And it was a magical day for the academy and obviously me and Danny personally.
Yeah. And then you mentioned about some of the characters in there. You said Duncan Ferguson already, but Slaven Bilic was a big one at the time. And you and him used to go in together. He was. I remember you telling me a story about he was going about when he lived in London and how he used to be neighbours with Elton John or something like that.
Slaven was a brilliant character, a brilliant fella, but he lived local to me and didn't really like driving too much. And every so often we used to share lifts, and maybe on one of his poorer days, he had a bit of a moan to me that once he used to live in London in a flat next door to Elton John and shop in Harrods, and now he lives next door to me, and he gets asked for an ABC car from Safeway. You know, but he was a player ahead of his time. You know, quite clever how he played the game. You know, if you got a nudge, he'll go down under pressure to calm everything down. It wasn't sort of a bit frowned upon back then, but that's how he used to play the game. But the character, I think Gary Speed was brilliant. Top professional. He looked after the youngsters really well. He'd be asking certain things from the youngsters, but he'd be applauding you quite a lot. And when it comes from players like him, I wasn't a sheltered and baller.
No.
You just watched him. And I think I've spoken the Echo before, where I think we played Wimbledon or Crystal Palace, Selhurst Park, and he ran past me and tackled my man.
Right.
Didn't say nothing. And then that sort of triggered me to wake up and, stand up. I know what I need to do now. And he didn't have to say anything.
No.
But he was a leader, but technically a very, very good footballer as well.
Yeah. I mean, what was Duncan like?
Duncan, again, he was your hero. You know, it was someone that the club needed at the time. And, you know, remember we got Ian Durant and Duncan, and Ian Durant was fantastic for us. And maybe his knee, whether he's going to last in the Premier League or not. Yeah. But then when Duncan become sort of the icon as he did for the Evertonians, I've got a T-shirt with Duncan on him going to semi-finals with the Leeds. Yeah. And then obviously we win the cup. And then shared a training ground with him. He was quiet, but aggressive when it needed to be. You know, and you knew when you had a big game coming up, because Duncan had a little bit of a glint in his eye, looking forward to it. And 9 times out of 10, he pulled out top performances and big moments for us, and just to share the changing room with them, and the stick he used to give you if he tried to turn you make sure he knew. You know, just to have them battles with players like that, you know, to your wit, obviously Duncan the size of him, you had to be a little bit cuter and clever to get the best of him at times, but you know, he made sure he wouldn't give you an easy ride. So you know, that's part of your journey and your development.
The Royal Blue Podcast from the Liverpool Echo.
It's only a kick, a jump, a block. It's only a serve. It's only a tackle. A run. It's only for the fans. After all, it's only pressure. You got this. Adidas.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
The Royal Blue Podcast from the Liverpool Echo.
Before we go on to that game against Coventry City, I just wanted to ask you, we were talking recently because obviously Everton were away in Portugal on that training trip, and you were telling me about the first time you went away with Everton there and when Howard took them away on a mid-season trip. And I mean, that was actually Slaven and Duncan, wasn't it? Was the story behind that? I'll let you tell that one in a minute. But it's an interesting one, wasn't it? Because again, you're saying you're out there with your heroes, really. And it was quite intimidating, although you enjoyed it. The whole idea that you might have to get up there and do a bit of a turn.
Yeah, I was very quiet in the changing room. Yeah. I come alive on match days. Pretty intensive in training. But competitive match days is when I come alive and when I come vocal. But Monday to Friday, and pretty quiet, pretty shy, timid guy, especially in that dressing room with the characters that we had. And the club or the FA brought a new rule where the players got sent off. The club could fine them 2 weeks' wages.
Yeah.
Howard took exception to that and thought we can use that money for better things. And we went away to Cyprus for a few days. We weren't going through a good time. And he thought a break would do his wonders, and Duncan had to pay for one meal and Slaven the drinks the next day. Yeah. And just to see, as you said, the heroes are sort of out of the environments that you normally see them, just to relax and to train. They work hard, they played hard. And Howard had a special thing where everyone had to stand up and sing a song. And I was absolutely dreading the moment it was going to come round to me. And Howard had his special cigars as well that a few players used to like. I didn't want to take one. And when I got told, if you want to play in the derby, you've got to take one, I took one straight away. I snatched his hand off, and then I had to obviously try and think of a song. Tried to hide in the toilet for a while. I tried everything that, but I had to stand up. But look, the lads we've all had to go through it. It was nerve wracking. Michael Branch was sitting next to me. He had to do it, and Michael's similar to myself, pretty shy in those situations. And we just had to get it done quick as possible, and the players joined in, so it makes it easier.
Yeah.
But then when it was over, the relief to actually enjoy the rest of the trip and then focus on what we had to do when we come home, and we got positive results after that. So it was a team bonding session that went well.
Yeah, but of course, obviously, it went to that final day. I remember how nervous I was just as a fan. I mean, going round before and think, because obviously it was 1-1 at the time, and it was a Stanley Dock Market beforehand, and someone had an Everton shirt, and they'd put a G and it says gone to one, because obviously first division at that time. And just, was that the day maybe Brian LeBone was pounding the pavements outside Goodison as well? It's too much. I mean, did that relay much back to you in the dressing room, that nervousness? Or
no, just... I've been asked this before, and it's only when I speak to, say, Don Hutchinson about it, and it brings back a few memories. But I think I was just still young and naive. It's Everton Football Club, and we're not going down. And it's only if you look at a couple of results beforehand and you look back now, you go, wow, we were in a bad situation. But I was living my dream.
Yeah.
And I was living like what I wanted to do as a kid, and just never thought the possibility of this football club going down. And there was no pressure on me of thinking I need to save them. You know, I just thought it would never happen.
Yeah.
Even moments in the game when it was very nervy and in the dark clouds come over Goodison Park. I just had belief that would never happen.
Yeah.
And I think it's obviously after the game when you see everyone's emotions, the boss's emotions, and it wasn't a pleasing time for myself after the game, because during the game I had a nasty challenge. Big student to my knee. And I'd like to see if anyone from the family enclosure ever witnessed that. I can throw a claim in at the physio. The physio had a few choice words with me.
Yeah.
He said, you've got a hole in your knee, you're coming off the pitch. And I told him, a few certain words, and I got a clip around the ear. Yeah. You know, he slapped me across the face. You know, you've got to come off the football pitch. And I was furious. I was really angry.
Yeah.
I was walking down the steps and Howard said, "What's up, lad?" And he went, "He won't let me play." And he goes, "Do you want to?" And I went, "Yeah." And he goes, "Get back on."
Yeah.
So I ran back on, and whether I infected the game or not, I do not know. It was just adrenaline, pain. Couldn't feel anything. And when we got back to the dressing room with the result the way it was, thankfully we stayed up. There was no celebration. It was very calm, very sort of, thank goodness that's happened. But I was sort of dragged in the doctor's office and thrown up against the wall and said I put the club at risk and my situation.
Yeah.
And you've gone against the medical advice, but I didn't care. The result was what was mattered of what we'd done.
Yeah.
Big box of painkillers and crutches it was for me to try to leave Goodison Park. So it was, look, you don't want to be talking about, I spoke to Barry Horn about these moments when I was a fan going to Goodison, queuing up at 10:30 to get into Gladys Street, and he doesn't like talking about these moments, but it's part of our history, unfortunately, and it's moments that I've experienced, which you don't hope you've never experienced again.
Yeah. And of course, obviously, the team stayed up there on goal difference, but then Howard went in there, and it was Walter Smith, and then it's all change again for you, isn't it?
Yeah, it was a very short space of time. I've had so many managers. I count Joe Royal as one of my managers and mentors, and under Willie Donaghy with Jimmy Gabriel, and it was sad to see Howard go. But Walter come in. Because I was injured through the summer with me, and I was at Belfield quite a lot, and so I knew there was a change happening. Archie Knox was walking around with a clipboard, trying to upgrade every part of Belfield as possible, and we knew pre-season was going to be tough. And I think the first day, I think Walter realised he's got a tough job, and we all turned up in shorts and flip-flops, as you normally do in the middle of summer for the 1st of July. He's come from a traditional club of Rangers where you've got to wear a shirt and tie and a suit.
Right.
So that drastically changed, and we all had to go shopping and find some suits.
You're getting a suit again.
You had to get a suit again. And then, so the standards went up then from just looking after yourself. You know, normal working class people go to work 9 to 5 wearing suits. So that's how they do it in Rangers, and we're doing the same. It relaxed a little bit, as it got on. But that's how Walter got the levels up. The training was brilliant, very hard. Archie had a big black book of every session. I would never really change and go off it. You know, when you're hoping for a bit of a day off or a second session out, no, Archie knew we had work to do. But there was a bit of a shame because of a lot of the players that we brought to the football club. Belfield wasn't big enough. So my dream from Belfield when I first started at Belfield as a YTS, we were in the A team or B team dressing room where the YTSs were, and then I got promoted, to the first team, and you're sharing the changing room with your heroes, and you're being a part of the sort of banter, or hiding in the corner listening to the banter. And I know what's going on as the first team, but because it was so small, you know, Archie basically told players who were under 21, put your hand up, and we had to sort of go back to the old dressing room. So it was disappointing because you're not really involved at all. But then I was sort of quite glad because I'm back with all my mates again. And that was a fantastic set. They won the Youth Cup, you know, and I feel a bit sorry that they never got more of an opportunity to have a go. A few of us did, you know, obviously Danny and Dunny, but there's a few more maybe could have got a bit more opportunity, but new faces and were coming to the football club. So I stopped the development of that youth team. You know, Gavin McCann left and Richard left not for long after. And so it was sad to see some of your mates start leaving the football club, but then you start sharing the changing room or training sessions with players like John Collins and, you know, and players not coming in, but they've all had big careers. Like you watch on the TV, and so you're looking at them and seeing what they're up to. And I used to love when we got new signings. I remember Nick Barmby's first training session. Yeah. I know that was under a different manager, but you know, I gave Nick a few good little kicks, but Nick was not afraid to give me some back. The elbows were out, the aggression was there, and I was thinking, if you come to this football club, you've got to try and get the better than me type attitude. And it was I loved putting battles like that, and so every time new faces come in, you know, even no matter who they were, what name it was in the back, I made sure they had a bit of a tough training session on the first day.
Yeah, And that first season, I was going to ask you about the penalties, because obviously you scored the penalty against Newcastle that night, the infamous night that Duncan was being sold to Newcastle United, who you're playing against. Just ask me about the penalties, because other than that that header right at the start, your first goal for the club, they're all penalties. One was penalty rebound, wasn't it? Manchester City. So what was your technique when it came to penalties? Did you always put the side beforehand? How did you go about it?
It was England, really. Going away with England a lot, I was the penalty taker for majority of my England career as a youth level. And the goalkeeper coach was the Arsenal goalkeeper coach, and he told me how David Seaman would go about his reading the players' minds, okay, and where they would go with their arms. So if the arms were up, they're going across the body. If the arms down, they're going the other side. And I thought that was a bit too easy, so I used to just do the opposite. So then that's why I got picked up being the England goal England penalty taker. And the only time it came to my mind at Everton was the Coventry game.
Yeah.
And I was thinking, and obviously wasn't in the position to do it, but I was the hope, because I didn't think we really had a penalty taker back then. And I was thinking, I'd like to take that. Obviously, Nick took it. And
maybe you should have
done. Yeah, but who knows? But, it was in my mind, should I go and get that? But Nick took it, and, it happens, you can miss penalties. And the one I did miss at Newcastle, that still, at Manchester City, that still baffles me to this day, because the keeper who saved it was my England goalkeeper coach, teammate, Nicky Weaver, which I told Nicky when I used to practice my penalties, I told the goalkeepers where I'm going and cheat so I can get the power and the accuracy. Yeah. And I used to like going to the keeper's right, and I could fire it in, and he didn't care if I'm missing training, but it was just to get me distances right and the angles right and just do 10, 15 penalties. And then that was Thursday, and then I'm playing against him at the weekend, and I've gone the other way.
Yeah.
And then he obviously went the other way, saved it. But then I tapped the ball with my right foot in the Gladys Street, which was never a dream. Yeah. Scoring with my right foot in the Gladys Street, but it was my first goal in the Gladys Street. So I was taking it, and I pulled Nicky after and said, "Why did you go that way?" And he goes, "I don't know."
Yeah.
So it was me, my mind over matter, really got the best of me. But just the goalies reunion, I'm thinking too much into it. So that was disappointing to miss, but then made up a score with my right foot. And it just come naturally. Obviously, Unzi was the penalty king at the club. So it was maybe when he wasn't playing, or I had the opportunity to step up to the plate. And we didn't really speak about it, me and Unzi. It was sort of like, if Unzi missed, I'll take the next one.
Okay.
If I'm on the pitch, I'll take it. And that's sort of how it sort of progressed naturally.
Yeah.
Manager never really said anything. And I'd loved that competition of me against you, like a boxer. The only time, it's a team game, but get your wits against the goalkeepers. It was good. I used to love that competition.
Yeah, so it was never unseemly squabbles over who was going to take it or anything.
No, it was always. It was always, we went to penalties, you'll see the ones who used to step up. And majority of the time it was the youngsters. A lot of the youngsters, lads, would they back themselves to step up to take the penalties. And I think as you get older, maybe you start thinking of the consequences, what happens if you miss. So I think that the wiser head stepped away, and the ones who had no fear stepped up to the plate.
The Royal Blue Podcast from the Liverpool Echo. The Royal Blue Podcast from the Liverpool Echo.
That first season on the Walter, kind of doing a little bit better, but then it started to look a bit sort of dodgy come Easter time. And then Kevin Campbell came in, and what an incredible run that was. Did you remember much about that particular period? And
we were doing pretty well, and then we just had a really bad section of the season where we just couldn't pick up results. I used to speak to Walter in the office quite a lot. I'd be away with England on Thursday nights with either England 18s or 21s, and I wasn't training that much. He was trying to wrap me in cotton wool as much as possible, Walter, and asked more from me. Mm-hmm. He goes, "You're not a young player anymore. You're one of our key players, and so I want you to demand more from your teammates." And then he brought in two youngsters from, I think they were from Spain or Italy, on trial, and we've had sort of the older players come in and haven't really hit the ground running. And then when Kev Campbell come, I remember watching Kev on the TV training on his own, and you're thinking, not another one. We need someone who's going to save this football club. And he hadn't done it for a couple of years, and we had these two lads on trial for a week or 2 weeks, and as I said before, I used to put me own wits against these guys when they come in, and they could difficult, but they ran riot.
Really?
And I was thinking, well, why don't we sign these two? These look dangerous. These can cause some problems. And Kev come for a day, and we signed Kev.
Yeah.
And you're thinking, you know, can't really see the light at the end of the tunnel here. Yeah. But then match day comes and he's a different animal.
Yeah.
You know, Mark Hughes was the same. You know, training, you know, you didn't see anything from Mark Hughes.
Right.
But match day, they do what they do.
Yeah.
You know, they save themselves for match day, and history proves itself, or Kevin did.
Yeah.
You know, he was in the right place at the right time. He had the ability to find the net. Yeah. He was great with the youngsters. He was a great character. He was happy-go-lucky.
Yeah.
We were in a dark period. Mm-hmm. He always had a smile on his face, and you sort of took that sort of belief from him, who's done it. You know, he wasn't sort of turning up to the club of his sort of last paycheck.
No.
He had a sort of job to do, and and knew he could pass down his experience, which he did to a mixture of a football team that we had. You know, with Franny Jeffers, he had a fantastic link up with Franny.
Yeah.
He was just a shining star, which I didn't see was going to happen. But thankfully, he chose Everton, because he did have a lot of choices.
Yeah.
And he saved his football club with his performances.
Yeah. And obviously, early in the next season. Now, thankfully, obviously, they've done it once during COVID, gone and won at Anfield again. But it remains the last time in front of fans. I know this is Goodison Park, my home, but I've got to ask you about that particular game. I mean, what was that like at Anfield when...
There were obviously always brilliant battles for me. The first thing, the time the fixture list comes out, I look for those two fixtures. And the record at Anfield hasn't been too good. You know, we've had good performances sometimes and haven't got the results. And we got the draws there. We've been unlucky so many times with referee decisions here and there. And But to finally get over the line with Kev's goal and it come off sort of me long short throwing, that went a bit too far. It was hard to read for my strikers. But it was it looked like a well-worked goal when it went over Duncan's head to Nick Madar, who laid off for that Duncan. For that's one of the derby goals. But for Kev's goal, was sort of similar. It went a little bit shorter, got cleared. But Kev found that net, and to celebrate in the... in the dressing room afterwards, with the delight of the players, you can see it meant a lot to them, as well as myself being local.
Yeah.
I knew that was a big result and something that we can sort of hold on to for the rest of the season.
Yeah, and I remember when Walter Smith passed, you were up there at the service. But I mean, it was an up and down relationship for you, in that, and also you signed a few players in your position. You obviously had the injuries as well. I mean, what was that like when he was doing stuff like that? Was it tough?
It was tough.
Yeah.
But enjoyable. You know,
with the challenge.
Yeah. I think Richard Gough comes to the football club. I thought he was brilliant. He probably changed my mindset a little bit, Goughy. As I said before, players were coming in and probably weren't gaining the respect you'd expected, you know, from these type of players. But Goughy was just an instant success. As soon as he came to the football club, he was well known for under Walter, and we knew, if anything we said to Richard, might go back to the gaffer. But it was all for the right reasons. He was 100% professional. He spent a lot of time with myself and the youngsters and how to go about certain things. I might shout and scream and have the aggression, saying the right things, but how I was saying it was probably over the line a little bit. And Goughy just had a way of sort of teaching me the best way to get the best out of your own teammate at times, and help the whole team as morale. Not just about himself personally, because a lot of time Richard was injured. But he's him and John Collins, the professionalism that just sort of bled through the whole of us. If they're doing it at their age, we've got to start doing it. We've got to step up to the plate, especially the youngsters. But Walter, I was playing all over the place, you know, under Howard. I played right back, I played centre mid, centre half, left centre half, left wing back, left back. And Walter was sort of the same.
Yeah.
You know, Walter, he wanted me playing left back, but then he'd like to have his back four or back five, sometimes back seven at times of defenders. So then you left yourself in centre midfield at times. But look, just putting that shirt on and having that opportunity. And I just knew if whoever he brought into football club, I had to raise my game.
Yeah.
So, you know, if that's Walter's way of sort of give me a kick up at the backside, I go, we need to do more. You know, you'd never speak about it. You'd say, you know, you don't want to be a forgotten player. You say you're a young player, you get away with mistakes when you're young.
Yeah.
But when you're a senior pro or a key player like you are, you need to do more. You need to do more for yourself and your teammate. And we had regular contact, and I liked that because he showed me time. So I knew he liked me, but I needed to do more. You know, because I've gone from my number 25 shirt.
Yeah.
So then I probably in a weird way subconsciously thought I've made it when I got my number 3.
Yeah.
Then he got Pistone, and Pistone wanted a number 3, and that got took off me to number 12, and that hurt.
Yeah.
That really hurt. Because I think, not the number 3 get taken off me, wow, that does hurt. Who wants number 12? You know, 12, I mean, Agent East probably all right with that.
12,
but I didn't like that. I'd rather go back to number 25, say, but you know, that gets taken out of your hands because you're a youngster. But I had my favourite, I had my best season as number 12, you know, and so it was probably his man management of you knew. How to get the best out. Keeps Pistone happy. He's new faced, new opportunity for him. Comes to a new football club. But then Gary Naismith come as well. We brought Unzi back. So, you know, while I'm looking around the pitch thinking, you know, we need players in certain positions, they brought three in and around my area. But that just kept competition up. And, you know, and we had a battle between ourselves and somehow we, I think at some point, probably all played in the starting 11 at one point. If you look back at some games, we were all involved and... but yeah, it's kept on my toes. Wouldn't keep me comfy. You know, yes, you'd be a key player, but it didn't mean you guaranteed games. And as I said, Walter did wrap me in cotton wool at times because of my knee injury, and he probably thought I'm not going to get many games out of Michael if he carries on playing for England on Thursdays and coming back playing for the club on, say, Southampton on a Saturday away. There was a lot of travelling going on. It's obviously a lot better now. I did do the internationals, but back then it was tough, but when you're young, you can do everything. You feel like you can do everything, but if your manager can spot your performances sort of level off or going below par, you know, he needs someone else for the team. So if he thought Unzi and Gary Naismith or Pistone could help the team do that, then that's his objective. So it just made a competition for me, really, to prove that I'm going to be the better one.
Yeah, I mean, you mentioned that level of form that you were at back then, and obviously the England call-up that you said there as well. I mean, what was that was like? Obviously, Sven in the news recently, managing at Anfield, getting the call.
Well,
from
I didn't
him.
Know he was a red, so I think my thoughts on Sven might change now. To be honest, similar to me Everton debut, the England call-up, because I think when you're young, you want everything tomorrow, and when I was in the under-21s. A few times I got called up to the first team, Italy away, I think Bulgaria, on the bench under Kevin Keegan. And I thought you're going to get the opportunity to get on there. And Ray Clements was warming up behind the goal. He came running down the touchline, shouting my name. So I half heard it, but started doing extra stretches.
Yeah,
you know, thinking here's my time, my moment now to reflect. And then as I put my head up to listen to what he said, he said, get Carra. I was like, I'm devastated. There's my moment gone. So Jamie Carragher went on, and I think another time, I think Michael Gray went on. But I just knew it was going to come at some point. If I keep up my performance up, there's the opportunity to play for England will happen. But then, you know, just three times I've been in the squad, or twice I've been in the squad with two different managers. And then Sven's first time, I was feeding the ducks. And Alan Myers, as we all know, he gave me the phone call to say, I was in the squad. I just put the phone down because I didn't think.
Mucking about.
So Alan's off to one of his tricks again. Yeah. And he went, no, seriously, you're going to get named in the senior squad. Yeah. I went, right, okay. And then I was just hoping that this is my time. Hopefully I get my moment to finally get an England cap. And thankfully, Sonny gave me that opportunity. Didn't start. Chris Powell started. Yeah. But it was, you know, I was thinking, you know, I'm a youngster. Hopefully, I should be the future of England. Yeah. That's how you're dreaming. But yeah, look to where that where the three lions is in every age level. That was the one missing for me.
Yeah.
So yeah, it was brilliant.
Yeah. What was Sven like? What did he say to you? Yeah, do you remember?
No, it was training. Yeah. Similar to the City days, it was very quiet. Yeah. You know, it was my first time I've had a foreign manager, really, I suppose, who was very quiet. And we just do a shadow play, and he did say, look, you're coming on second half, so make sure you're ready. So I think I remember warming up a lot sharper than what you'd normally do at half time. I think me and Frank Lampard, there was a lot of changes, but we were warming up a bit more aggressively, playing against the top side, Spain, and to come off that pitch. And it wasn't at Wembley, unfortunately, it was at Villa Park. Yeah. But it was, I think we were drawing half time.
Yeah.
And then we ended up winning the game 3-1, so it was good to be a part of it. Blame Michael Owen, really. He should have scored in my first couple of touches. Yeah. I'd done a 1-2 and I put the ball over to Michael. He tried to lob the keeper and unfortunately just didn't hit the back of the net. So that could have been maybe an extra boost. But yeah, it was just great to share the pitch with those players and to get me England cap was brilliant.
Yeah. So on the back of all that, obviously, like you said, when you're arguably your best season at Everton, and then obviously the heartbreak for you as Evertonian to be told that the club have accepted an offer for you. I mean, how did that all pan out in terms of your departure?
Just out the blue, really. I think everyone out on the outside seemed to think of it. My dad's friends and my friends used to say, what's going on? And I heard nothing else. I was away on holiday, picking up Player of the Year awards. I picked it up and said, I'll see you next year. Yeah. You know, can't wait to get the season going. So my thoughts were get back to pre-season and be a blue. And that's what happened, started pre-season. I was still in and out of the first team sort of training sessions with my knee, with my injuries. So I was with the physios a lot, with the team, in and out of warm-ups and stuff. But I'm just thinking about getting myself ready for the first game of the season. And all of a sudden, you know, Trevor Stephen was my agent at the time. And he said they've accepted offers from Liverpool, Middlesbrough and Rangers. You know, what Walter, which I said, we used to speak quite a lot.
Yeah.
Didn't pull me to the offers, didn't say anything. But before then, I was away on holiday and I come home to sign a new contract. And got to Goodison, on a Tuesday or Wednesday, cut my holiday short. And when I got to the Park End reception, the reception didn't know why I was there or the reason why I was there. And when I explained, she went away and come back and I got the call that the board have changed their mind, unfortunately. So that put me angrier to go to pre-season to show, you know, I deserve a contract, I want to stay here. Yeah. So I was, but unfortunately, because of my knee situation, I couldn't be a part of it. So, and that was really, really frustrating. You just wanted to prove a point to Walter Smith, or whether it was Walter's decision or whether it was the board's decision, I still, to this day, don't know. But the way it all transpired is I went up to Rangers for a weekend to see Trevor and then met Rangers. Steve McLaren was the manager at Middlesbrough. Obviously, the going across park was never going to happen.
Yeah.
And it was just, they started showing me the love that I was probably craving a little bit from the club, not just the manager. The manager, I wasn't too fussed whether Walter loved me or liked me.
Yeah.
You know, I just knew he was my manager. It was sort of the way David Murray sort of wanted to have the ambition of what Rangers wanted to do, play Champions League football. They wanted to bring more players to the football club. And I thought, yeah, it's all great. And then went home hoping that Everton might change their mind or something. Because my medical went on for a good 2.5 weeks.
Right.
Because of my knee situation. And you're just hoping in that moment Everton might, you know, change their mind and say, look, yeah, we'll be a part of it. But Walter did say, look, as it got further down the line, that if you come back at this football club, you want to be playing for the World Cup.
Yeah.
You'll be rotting in the reserves if you start wearing this shirt again. So that was sort of a dagger in my heart.
So
I knew there was no comeback. There was no point of me, if I wanted to chase my dreams of going to the World Cup, being at Everton was an option, unfortunately. Yeah. And I had to pick between Steve McLaren or Dick Advocaat at Rangers, really, to see who can say that journey. And a lot of the Howard Wilkinson, the Peter Taylor, a lot of England coaches who have been mentoring me a lot were giving me, you know, while I've been at Everton, yes, you've had your best season and you've done well in Player of the Year, but the edginess of you going forward and the aggression of it going forward has been sort of stifled a little bit with the style of play. And to get back as the England forward, you need to play for the forward thinking team again. And you have all the noise and coming to your ears, but you, at the end of the day, you just don't want to leave Everton.
Yeah.
You know, and I think I spoke to Preno the day I left. I had to go back to Belfield to pick up my bits and, you know, I just broke down. I didn't know what to say or what to do. It's just your dream's gone.
Yeah.
You know, but then it's sort of that door closes and then you've got to focus on your career then of what you need to do for yourself. And while it's sort of selfish, it still hurts to this day. But it was come back home then. You're back with your mates then watching Everton when you had the opportunity. Yeah. You're back with your season tickets with your mates and you're following the Blues as a fan, wishing you were on that pitch with that shirt. But, you know, it happens, part of football.
Yeah.
You don't get, it's not all ups. You know, you do get downs. And unfortunately, that was a sad part of my career.
The Royal Blue Podcast from the Liverpool Echo. The Royal Blue Podcast from the Liverpool Echo.
I mean, it's a certain naivety, I guess, we've got as fans and include journalists in that as well, because you think, oh, I'll play for Everton. I'll be at Everton forever. And I mean, that was your dream. But then when you're told that, and especially when you're told they've accepted an offer from Liverpool, because it's only a year after Nick Barmby's gone to Liverpool, and I don't know, they're not going to like throw Michael Ball under the bus.
Yeah, it was heartening. You know, apparently Liverpool have been in three times before then, which I only found out after the event. And that was, you wondered why Gerard Houllier was at a lot of England games, you know, under 18s, 21s. He wasn't around the English FA a lot, and that's probably those reasons. Obviously playing with Michael and Steven Gerrard and Carragher under 21s, and there were a lot of Liverpool. So going away with England was very difficult for me, with a big connection to Liverpool, big connection to Manchester United, and sitting at the wrong table at lunchtime could be very interesting.
Yeah.
So it was only, obviously, Franny Jeffers got into the England fold. You had a bit of a teammate from back home at your club, and they used to ask you questions. I was training, what do you do in training? And it was a little bit different than what we used to do a lot. So, but I was used to that as a youngster. So it was easy for me to gel that part of it. You know, players like, say, Danny Cadamatri, when he was part of the England fold, I think he probably struggled in certain sessions because it was brand new to him. It was different. When you get told your time's up, and the media, the fans, my mates were giving me stick, you know, and they knew half the truth. You know, one of my friends had the facts from Liverpool of what the contract offer was going to be, and you know, and I'm going, I'm not going anywhere.
Yeah.
You know, this is not happening. The club hasn't said anything to me, but when it finally does happen, it's they feel like, say, I told you so. But to me, I was coming back from holiday to sign a new contract, and when it got took away, it's like, it's just a dagger in your heart. You just don't know what to do. You're in a bit of a daze, I feel, for quite a while. I went to obviously a fantastic club at Rangers, but you just got to focus on trying to get over the line with that. And that medical was very lucky to go through. To be honest, I could have been an Everton player for a couple of more years if Rangers decided not to accept. You know, because the Rangers lost out to John Hartson the year before over a medical issue, didn't want to take the opportunity or the risk, and then obviously went to Celtic, done really well, and I don't think they wanted to lose out on another one.
Yeah.
So they took the gamble with myself for them. It's football. It happens a lot, but when you're a youngster, you know, I was just turning 21, it was difficult to take.
Yeah, sort of difficult to take. I mean, you mentioned the injuries there. I mean, what was the issue? Was it the knee, wasn't it?
Yeah, when I was coming through with Everton, Les Elm, the famous physio, loved me because he didn't really know me. You know, never went in the physio's room, didn't go to the gym in there. Yeah. You know, everyone in the gym was always injured. And he was really impressed how I was never in there. I was always training every day, doing everything, but I was probably overplaying. And speaking to people now, like Wes Brown, who was at Little Shore with me, and Michael Owen, we were playing a lot of football at 14.
Yeah.
And whether there's wear and tear of that age group of too many hours on the training field, probably, and jumping the gun of playing from 17, you know, an age group to men's football, probably sort of hampered us for that 3 or 4 years, when it sort of, we all seem to have the same or similar injury that stopped our sort of careers. Or Wes had a similar injury with his knee. But I just felt the medical advice at the time, or what was available at the time. You know, if it happened now, it'd probably be easily recovered. But back then, it was a cortisone injection straight into the knee, which is a big no-no.
Yeah.
Masked issue.
Yeah.
But I got player of the year, so it can't be that bad. I mean, in my mental head, I'm thinking, yes, I'm sore every day.
Yeah.
I'm sore in training. Not training at all for the good 18 months with the team. But I'm playing well. I'm performing well. So my knee can't really be that bad. Then with those cortisones, they do start relaxing a little bit. Pain starts coming back. You need the second one to sort of get me through to the end of the season, which again I did. And you're just in the trust of the medical people in and around you. And you listen to their experience and expertise of what they feel's the best for your injury. And I didn't think it was when I went to Rangers. Yeah. Rangers sort of knew something was happening because I was... Whether what we scan said one thing, but my body was doing everything they asked.
Yeah.
So it's only obviously Rangers found out at a later date after, fortunately, 12, 13 games, my knee finally sort of blew up. And thankfully for me, the they just didn't swim on medical advice. They flew me straight to Colorado to see Dr. Stedman, the best knee surgeon in the world, who knew, asked me to do certain exercises.
Yeah.
And I'm going, I haven't flew all the way here to do exercises. And he said, you're fine. I said, trust me, I'm not.
Yeah.
You know, the doctor come over to me. The Rangers had a full-time doctor, a Dutch doctor back then. And he explained the issue. And so he scanned me. And then within a few hours, I was booked in to get an operation the next day. And he warned me how lucky I was to still be playing football. So there was one strand of tendon in your patella tendon that was fresh. The rest was all rotten away. And it's all eating away. So you were very, very lucky. And, you know, one kick, one slide tackle, that could have gone and would have put you back longer than what it was. 2 years it took me to get back from that. So I missed a lot of development, a lot of frustration from Rangers fans and obviously the Rangers club, but more importantly myself. You know, it's just, you want to be playing football and that gets taken away from you for something that could have been probably looked after better. So when you think about the whole story, you get older and wiser, you feel that Everton probably have an idea of why they pulled the contract and you know, but not to be a part of the conversation, that sort of hurts. Like, it's gone round the back a little bit. But yeah, look, it happens. You just got to take it, do what you need to do, work very hard, trying to settle into a new football club. We're trying to go places, bringing good players, Ronald De Boer to the football club, and Tori Andrew Flo, breaking transfer records, and missing out on a double, missing out on a treble. You know, you're sitting on your sidelines, you want to get that opportunity. The reasons why I went up there is to win football games, but it wasn't to stay up there for 4 years. It was just to get up there and win trophies and excel, you know, trying to learn and develop myself and hopefully get an opportunity to come back down to the Premier League. But, you know, after Rangers, it was just an uphill battle of trying to do that. And, you know, besides my trophies at Rangers, when I finally won, it was the player of the month in my first month back in August. Mikel Arteta got the young player of the month. So it was a good little blue connection there in August, that after 2 years out, to win that showed that I could win those battles. And it sort of gave me a pat on the back that I can still do it.
Yeah. I mean, what was that like? Obviously, you still talk with great affection at your time at Rangers. I think up there to Ibrox, it kind of looks like the ground that Goodison Park could have become if it had been developed. But what was it like? We obviously know about the intensity there, obviously, with Celtic and Rangers, and it's the two massive clubs. I mean, just what's it like being at Rangers in that kind of environment?
It was a bit of a struggle for me, and especially being out. It took me a while to get my first Old Firm win. But when you do, and when you witness one, it's magical. But it's like Goodison. You know, me and Richard Dunn used to talk about, like, after the game, we said, do your mouth go dry? And I was like, yeah. No matter how many bottles of water or Lucozade you have, you know, you come out to Z Cars, which is a bit of a thrill anyway, but after about a minute into the game, your mouth's dead dry.
Yeah.
And you're like, oof. And it's just the adrenaline of being a part of it all. And and Ibrox was similar to that, you know, but like first witness at Goodison, that was like, oh, I need to drink over here.
Yeah.
I'm on the opposite side of the pitch, you know, there was no Lucozade bottles. I had to wait to half time.
Yeah.
It's just that, I think, the nervousness and the pressure and just the awe of the atmosphere of the fans, you know, it's trying to give you that extra buzz to do more. And, you know, it was always sort of that dry mouth situation. I always come into it, and when I went to Rangers, it was the same, but the levels were different. Yeah. The pressures were slightly different. You're not playing against, you know, top teams every week.
Yeah.
But I explained to people down here that it was like their cup final. I played for Everton in the FA Cup and being embarrassing to Tranmere. And we played in the FA Cup and League Cup against Bristol City, where we should steamroll them.
Yeah.
But it's their cup final.
Yeah.
And when you're playing the lesser teams in that league, it's their cup final. It's their times to shine. And back then, if you played well against Celtic and Rangers, 9 times out of 10, Celtic or Rangers will buy you. So they're playing for their careers.
Yeah.
You know, I played against Scott Brown a few times and we're winning 2 or 3 nil and he's still kicking yet. He's still elbowing yet. He's still showing that, you know, it's hurting him. And obviously he went on to do well for Celtic and a great captain. So you had to be switched on. You had to be professional. And the players that we have are fantastic. So we sometimes get scrappy results. We had the quality to break it down. But when Mikel comes to the football club, we played against Mikel when he played for PSG in the Champions League. We knocked him out. So there was him and Patricino playing. In that moment, we beat them on penalties in the end. We should have we steamrolled them, really.
Yeah.
We beat them on penalties. But Mikel's a youngster, showed a lot of promise. He was on loan there from Barcelona.
And, yeah.
Rangers seen that and tried to snap him up. And
yeah.
he come, and we had him and Barry Ferguson in midfield, yeah. which Barry was probably not too happy about. Because
yeah.
Barry, everything went through Barry. He was a youngster. He was reminded of me at Everton. He was a youngster yeah. coming through, but he got given the armband to like Steven Gerrard probably at Liverpool, where to give him that sort of experience to say, look, it's your football club. You know, you've got the levels, you know, the demands of this club takes, and we all fed off that.
Yeah.
But Mikel wanted the same as well. Mikel yeah. wanted every pass off the back four, yeah. off me as left back. I'd be saying, Mikel, go away. You know,
yeah.
get up there. But they wanted to dedicate and dictate every part of the match. But then they got the best out of Mikel, but they got the best out of Barry, because Barry then moved forward and scored, yeah. you know, 12 to 18 goals that season. And then when Mikel left, it was a bit disappointing. And then when I seen him linked to Everton Football Club, I was pleased. But thinking as he got that edge, because he was young, he was a youngster, technically very, very good, had a little bit of aggression. But I think when he went back to Spain, I think he found the man's game a bit more demanding,
yeah.
which he brought into his game when he came to Everton, because I knew how Everton tick, how Moyes ticks.
Yeah.
And I was just hoping the door would come back to the football club, which it was nearly did a few times under David Moyes. And it, unfortunately, it never. But glad to see Mikel would put that blue shirt on because of his ability.
The Royal Blue Podcast from the Liverpool Echo. The Royal Blue Podcast from the Liverpool Echo.
You finished back in England with Manchester City and Leicester. Well, before that, I just wanted to ask you, obviously, going over to PSV, I imagine that'd be a very different experience to Scotland there, obviously a much more technical game. I mean, what was the feeling behind that one? How did it all come about?
Well, Rangers manager who signed me was Dutch. Jan Wouters, who's probably famous in England for elbowing Paul Gascoigne.
Yeah.
And Gascoigne putting the opera mask on his face. But Jan was my coach, first team coach. Aggressive, demanding, typical Dutch.
Yeah.
But good. The sessions were brilliant. And in that moment, obviously, I had a contract situation at Rangers, which was really frustrating between Everton and Rangers. Still, to this day, don't really understand how it all transpired, really. And
it's over installments.
It's installments. Yeah. And they've said if it hits so many games, they've got to pay Everton. And I still don't think I hit that landmark. But, you know, I ended up to play football. David Moody, to be fair to him, you know, he said, look, I should honour this contract, but I can't afford to. And can we come to some agreement that, you know, can you, you know, part ways with a bit of money
yeah.
to get yourself back on that pitch? Because we need you. We're chasing Celtic. We're still in the cups. You know, we don't want this season to go. And he brought in a couple of left-backs.
Yeah.
Paolo Vanoli, an Italian fella, good player. Good lad. And I agreed to pay 4,000 every time I played for Rangers. And the manager was over the moon. He come downstairs and said, get them, get changed. I said, now? I was like, yeah. I was okay. So I was on the bench and it was great to put that shirt back on and look, play. That's all you want, just play football. You know, no matter what I did in training, Monday to Friday, you train like, say, Maradona, Pelé, even though I didn't get to them levels.
Yeah.
But even no matter what I did, I could not be part of it for financial reasons, which was frustrating. Mm. So that agreement happened and Alex McLeish put me on, I think, 88, 89 minutes or something. I took a throw in, but just walking onto the pitch again, the crowd gave me a good reception, which was a good feeling for myself.
Yeah.
We won the game. And then I said to Alex McLeish afterwards, that throw has just cost me 4,000. And he's like, he didn't know what I was talking
right,
about.
Okay.
And, but we had a little smile. I said, look, it was worth every penny to just get back playing again. And it was the best decision I did, because from that day on, obviously Paolo Vanoli basically said, why have they signed me? And then but we had a bit of a partnership. He moved further forward. We ended up winning the league on the last day, the famous day at Rangers, the helicopter Sunday, with the results went our way. And you know we had a fantastic night. So everything from then on, you know, when I went to Rangers to win trophies for that decision alone, so that's put me back in the transfer market, really. You know, if I didn't do that, I probably would have been unknown for a couple of seasons.
Yeah.
You know, when we played Champions League qualifiers, and PSV had a very successful Champions League run the year before.
Yeah.
You know, unfortunately, AC Milan on the away goals put AC Milan through to play Liverpool in the famous 2005, and that PSV team was very strong, but they sold their left back to Tottenham, and our goalkeeper was a PSV legend at Rangers at the time, Ronald Ratterhouse, and he said, have a look at Michael. So scrawled the DVDs, the Ashjan Walters about myself, and all of a sudden I'm going to Birmingham to talks for a year, and then on the way to the airport, because I didn't phone you up, you're diverting, you know. And he says all the right things. I wanted to develop you. Look, you're coming to Holland. You had a development league, but you're still young. I can get you back in the England team. He's saying all the right things. Champions League, we need you. Can you get here in time? Mm-hmm. And somehow I've signed for PSV Eindhoven after leaving the home, thinking I was going to Birmingham and being back home in England. And that was a fantastic club. Similar to Rangers, of how expectations, how to play football, how to win. You know, they got to play football the right way, total football. Yeah. But it was obviously a smaller club, family orientated. It was open to your family, it was open to fans every day. You had people coming for coffees and very relaxed, but very simple. You know, and Gus, I think, was very, very clever. Everything was Dutch. All the team talks was Dutch, and expectations of listing teams who you're going to be playing, you were winning by X amount of goals, and this is what we need to do. But then you go round one by one, individually to myself, to a lot of the South Americans that we had. So Aruna Kone signed the same time as me, another blue. They had Alex, who went to Chelsea, Gomez, who went to Tottenham, the goalkeeper. And then obviously Clive came back, but Philip Cocu was our captain, the Barcelona legend. And we just had a fantastic side. And, you know, we ran away with the league, and it was great to win back-to-back league trophies. And Gus Hiddink ends up leaving, unfortunately, that summer. And Ronald Koeman come in the second year.
Nice.
And that's when another blue, Ronald, or do we call Ronald a blue?
Not on his Christmas tree. No.
And that's when it all changed for me, unfortunately. He brought in a left-back from Mexico. And he signed Jan Wouters from Rangers to come join him as an assistant. So I was over the moon.
Yeah,
you know, Jan knew how to tick, knew how I ticked, and vice versa. And so I thought it was going to be, you know, another good successful season with me. But we were got given the weekend off, and then come back on the Monday, and there's a bit of ice, or the pitches were frozen, and he asked me to go and play an indoor game after the weekend off. So I spoke to Jan and said, look, you know, I can't play on 4G. The surgeons told me not to play on 4G. I can't do that. And he goes, yeah, I know. I go and speak to him. And I got pulled in the office, and he went, you've got to play. And I said, well, I'm not putting my career on the line just for this friendly game. I'm sorry. And that's the only time I've really stood up to a manager to say, look, I've done this before.
Yeah.
And that's why I'm successful now, because I'm managing my body and managing my knee. Didn't like it. And then I got, what was it called? Got niacid, as we probably all know. And from then is sort of couldn't train with the first team. It was in the dressing room for a while. Cocu was trying to convince Ronald to change his mind, but no, he was stubborn, and he didn't say good morning, didn't look at you. So it was a long, and the transfer window was only just closed. Yeah. So it was a long 6 months for me.
New money, ass on
you. Yeah, so there was, you know, we, looking back at Ronald Koeman, he hasn't done it just for me and Omar Niasse. He's done it to Suarez. He's done it to some top players, but just to have that. You could speak to me in a better way than that, to go, look, you know, you're not going to be part of my plans. Let's see if we can get you to club and move on. Yeah. Fair enough. But not just the way you went about it. I thought it was sort of anti-English. I had that sort of anti-English thing.
Yeah.
I thought he was prying on, and it just lost total respect. And I think the players, the PSV, lost a lot of respect for him, how he handled it. They were all great with me. But, you know, they made it as much as home as they could, but they had a job to do. They had to still go and try and win a title, and they were pretty flying early on, so I felt left out a lot.
Yeah.
But that all went a bit pear shaped, and they lost a big lead in the title, and Cocu come to the rescue. I think they were 13 points clear, and they're going to the last game of the season. They were third, and they won 5-1 with a last minute goal for the Cocu, and they ended up winning the league. So it made up for my teammates, made up for PSV and the fans, because they deserved it. But then it was decided, they all knew Koeman would be leaving. And I was hoping, what could I sort of outlast them a little bit? But in that January window, the call come for Manchester City and I just jump shift straight away. Yeah. You know, I couldn't, I had that unrest at Rangers where you can't play football for financial reasons. This was a manager's decision, which is, that's his choice, but not playing football is the worst thing. And I want to develop, I want to improve. That's why I went there. Yeah. I've learned a lot. I learned a lot how PSV went about the technical side of things. And we went back to Manchester City under Stuart Pearce, a fellow left back, and he gave me the opportunity. I started off pretty brightly there. Got an early goal. And he started doing a few Dutch sessions, and how we went about it at City compared to back at PSV was a total eye opener.
Okay.
So, yeah, so I had to explain certain situations in the way I did. And it took them quite a while to sort of understand. Standing still is quite a hard thing to do in football.
Yeah.
It wasn't like a cat and mouse, which it sort of was. And it was a bit of an unrest. City was everywhere. But it was, for me, back at Premier League, back at home, give me a chance to just focus on football. And you know, I had the experience, say, of Everton, the relegation battles. We got ourselves pretty safe. So that was a sort of a tick, but it was only a loan to the end of the season.
Yeah.
And I was chasing a contract, so being trying to show I want to be there. Manager changes. And Sven Gordon Eriksson comes in. And it didn't look like I was going to be part of his plans because he went on numbers, he went on minutes, he went on games.
Yeah.
I only come the end of end of January, and he's thinking, you've only played 12 or 13 games. And then I explained I only signed in January. That opened his eyes up, and he said, thank goodness. And you can start pre-season, and if you do well, we'll give you a new contract. And because of my knee situation, it was only a small one. And that was brilliant under Sven. You know, he brought in he come in late, and 7 to 9 players, I think he bought within a 10-day window. Training was good. Levels went up, got more professional. But we started the season really, really good. Up there, round about Christmas, I think we were top, second, third in the league. We were up there. Unfortunately, after the Christmas period, I put it down to the Fodderners that we went down. It was not, the Fodderners were brilliant. Martin Petrov in front of me was fantastic.
Yeah.
You know, I let him just stay up and cheat a little bit and get us up the field because he was our match winners. Yeah. Alana was a match winner. We had a span of youth in there as well, with Studdage, Michael Johnson, Stephen Ireland, Nader Manua. Obviously, Richard was there as well, Mika Richards. But Sven brought in his extra players. I mean, he just had a fantastic balance. But these players, match winners, have never played in the Premier League over Christmas.
Yeah.
You know, they were, as I was saying earlier, I went away with England under 18s, 21s on a Thursday. These are flying to Brazil.
Yeah.
You know, Giovanni and Alana were going to Brazil on a Thursday, playing whoever they're playing in South America, flying back to play for us on the Saturday. And we're expecting them to be 10 out of 10. And I think to catch up with those games caught up to us, and we started drifting down the table near the end. But you know, we got Europe at the end of the day, not where we wanted to be.
No.
But it was great for Sven, great for the fans, for the journey they've been on, but for us as well. But unfortunately, we knew Sven was going to be leaving the football club, and it was back to square one again, where a new manager comes in, another ex-Blue, Mark Hughes, and says the same thing again: pre-season, show me what you're all about, and I'll give you the contract. So it was just chasing contract after contract, but I loved it all. It was a fantastic career. You know, I'd love to have done more, love to have won more, love to have won trophies with the Blues. But you know, it's just playing the game that you love as a hobby. Yeah. You know, you don't think about all the outside noise as a youngster. You're just kicking the ball against the fence and in your garden for hours on end, just hoping you could do that for one day. So luckily for myself, I did.
Yeah, I mean, it's just come full circle. I mean, in the grand scheme of things, I mean, it's a short career. I mean, it's a short, even short career if you've got injuries, but it's always a short career. Mm-hmm. Anyway, and I know, back to where you started in terms of being a Blue on those Goodison Park terraces.
It is now. Yeah. Trying to enjoy it, but I just love going. Like, the club have always been brilliant with me when I came back, when I was playing for other teams, and you know, my family's always a spare ticket here and there to watch the Blues, the odd one occasion. But finally, when I hung the boots up, it was trying to get my season ticket sorted for my little youngster, and you know, and bring him, I'd take my nephew and my young lad to the game every week, and it's doing what my dad used to do, and just now just going as a fan, and obviously as a commoner for the Echo, you've got to try and be professional at times. But in my head, I'm just there as a fan, and just living the sort of the dream I've had. I played on that pitch and given the experience to my little lad of what I used to do, but just go there as a fan, just sit with the fans, and just take everything in. And Goodison Park is my home. It was a dream to watch that as a kid, how successful we were. Yes, as a player, it wasn't where I wanted it to be, but it's still part of my history and my dream. So when it does finally go, I'll be sad. But the new Bramley Moor looks so impressive that I can't wait to go inside and have a nose. But to take me lad there and hope for more success for Everton Football Club.
Yeah, just finally. What do you think you've missed most about Goodison then?
It's got to be the wooden seats, hasn't it? Yeah. I think Post B was probably man of the match back in my day. I think it's just the atmosphere. We always talk about under the light of Goodison, because we just seem to perform better. As a player, I've always liked playing at night time. You do seem to have more energy, obviously, because you have a bit of a sleep in the afternoon, I suppose. That's why you're full of beans. But you just seem to can run and run forever for one reason or another at night games. And it's just the whole occasion now. Yeah. I think now witness it with my kids and my family, my sisters, and going the game of just the experience of going in the round, Goodison before the game, and going in, and you're just talking about who's going to be the lineup. You're moaning if whoever the manager picks. Yeah. There's always a talking point. You have your own opinion after the game, but it's just there that you just hope this team and this club can start pushing up the table and they're going to need every bit of help from ourselves as a fan base. We've had a torrid time lately, but we'll be there if whoever the owner is, whoever the manager is, we're all going to be there pushing for success.
Excellent. Well, thank you so much, Michael Ball.
Well, thanks, Chris.
Cheers.
You've been listening to the Royal Blue podcast from the Liverpool Echo.